labor movement's birth. Capitalism had already become the decisive force in the country before the First World War. But Chilean capitalism, from its birth, was tied in a decisive manner to foreign imperialist interests. On the other hand, it was tied to the interests of the big landlords through banking and commerce. It is precisely for this reason that the national bourgeoisie has never been capable of carrying out the historic tasks of the bourgeois democratic revolution, and never will be capable of so doing. How could a serious fight against imperialist control of the country be posed when the vital interests of the Chilean bourgeoisie were dependent upon foreign investment and foreign trade? How could a real agrarian reform be posed when an important part of its capital came from the same landlords with whom the bourgeoisie were connected by thousands of ties of family, education, etc.? In short, the historic tasks of the bourgeois democratic revolution could not be carried out by the bourgeoisie. Which other social class could carry them out? The peasantry? These dark masses, dispersed, ignorant, and subjected to the most brutal oppression for centuries, were only capable of periodically carrying out desperate acts of rebellion, without any possibility of success, because they didn't find a conscious leadership in another social class, based in the nerve centers of the country, the towns. The peasantry, the most heterogeneous social class, has been the social class that is least capable of playing an independent political role. It either acted under the leadership of the proletariat or the bourgeoisie. In fact, the struggle for political hegemony in the peasantry is a key question for the socialist revolution in Chile. In this sense, the first step is the recognition that it is impossible for this social class to play an independent role. The middle class? The political representatives of the middle class in Chile have got nothing in common with the French Jacobins, the petit bourgeois revolutionaries of the 18th century who made up the spearhead of the bourgeois democratic revolution. The long period of the economic boom, which lasted from 1891 to 1918, gave the Chilean oligarchy a wide margin for maneuver, to buy the loyalty of the middle class, offering it bureaucratic careers in the state and in government. In this way, there arose a new caste of professional politicians. The liberal politicians of the middle class sold themselves to the oligarchy for a small amount of money. From that moment, the middle class in Chile thought of politics as a very profitable business. This has been even more true for the so-called progressive politicians of the bourgeoisie. The liberals, radicals, and Christian Democrats fully participated in this repugnant spectacle of corruption and prostitution, whilst the masses of the peasantry and the working class were mere passive spectators of the parliamentary game. The political representatives of the middle class were tied hand and foot to the carriage of the oligarchy, which guaranteed them positions in the administration. For them, the system functioned quite well. For them, the system functioned quite well. From the very beginning, the Chilean liberals have been the left boot of the oligarchy. On the other hand, the rise of the Chilean economy carried with it the development of industry and the working class. With the development of industry and commerce, masses of poor peasants emigrated to the towns from the country. In 1907, some 43.2% of the population lived in urban centers. In 1920, this figure reached 46.4%. In Santiago alone, there was 14% of the total population. This rapid process of proletarianization led to the first attempts to organize the working class, beginning in the trade union field. From the beginning of the century, Luis Emilio Recabarren already headed the process of organization in the nitrate mines. Much later, in 1910, the FOCH was formed. 2 years later, Recabarren tried to give the first political expression to the Chilean labor movement with the formation of the POS in Iquique. But it was the events which followed the First World War, above all the Russian Revolution, which provoked an enormous radicalization within the young Chilean working class. The world recession, which began in 1918, caused a fall in the price of copper and nitrates. All the social contradictions which were hidden in the previous period came to the surface. Between the years 1913 and 1923, the real wages of the workers were reduced by 10% because of inflation. The importance of this period of radicalization is demonstrated by the wave of strikes that took place between 1911 and 1920. Some 293 were counted. The key event in the process of the awakening consciousness of the Chilean workers was the Russian Revolution. In an atmosphere of general radicalization, the Socialist Workers' Party of Chile POS came out in favor of the Russian Revolution, and in 1922 accepted the 21 conditions by which it could enter the Communist International, changing its name to the Communist Party of Chile. In the following years, Chilean society experienced a permanent crisis at all levels, which created enormous possibilities for the triumph of the socialist revolution. The illusions of the masses in the progressive politicians of the bourgeoisie were frustrated after the elections of 1918. The Liberal Alliance government of Alessandri Palma showed its complete inability to solve even one of the problems of the working class. The workers learned through bitter experience to completely distrust the liberal politicians of the bourgeoisie. Economic power remained in the hands of the monopolies and the landowners. The economic crisis went from bad to worse. With the growing control of imperialism over the economy, it became increasingly evident to everyone that the Chilean bourgeoisie was nothing more than the local agency of foreign capitalism. The political instability was reflected in the number of pronunciamentos military coups, and in the change in constitution in 1925. The world recession of 1929 hit Chile very hard, forcing it to abandon the gold standard and to repudiate its foreign debt. Mining production in 1929 only reached 52% of the average for the period of 1927-29. Unemployment rose massively. In 1929 there were 91,000 miners employed, at the end of 1931, only 31,000.